Hey everyone, welcome to the New Insight Podcast, where we interview the most important movers and shakers in ophthalmology and give you new insights on the innovations ahead. I'm your host, Viral Sheth. My guest today is Michael Freeman, the founder and CEO of Ocutrex, a cutting-edge company looking to improve the quality of life for our AMD patients that have lost significant central vision. In our conversation, we discuss Michael's background, including how he has always been interested in technology, and how he's married leading-edge software with hardware that pushes the limits. In his previous life, he was an Emmy Award-winning designer of streaming mobile video technology, which ultimately became the basis for the wireless standard that is still in use in mobile phones today. More recently, at Ocutrex, he has focused on the development of the Oculens, which leverages augmented reality, or AR, to help patients with central vision loss see and read like never before. He's also worked on some revolutionary new tech to help surgeons like us in the OR with his ORBot surgery visualization suite. I'm thrilled to be able to give our listeners some new insights from a true leader in our field. So without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Michael Freeman.
Okay, Michael, thanks for joining us. We're really looking forward to having you on the show. I think our listeners really value companies like this where, you know, you're working on products, you know, especially me as a retinal surgeon and a retina specialist working with lots of AMD patients. You know, my eye was drawn to kind of what you guys have been working on and really excited to dig into that so that other listeners can get a feel for what you've been working on, maybe how you got there and a little bit of the history of the company. So tell us a little, first, welcome and tell us a little bit about that.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and happy to share with your listeners. It is a little bit of an interesting story because the company actually got started because of my father, who was a brigadier general in the Air Force, and he owned three companies, one of them a computer company where I grew up and learned all what I learned about electronics. And he later in life developed macular degeneration, and he developed some fairly large scotomas, was unable, had to quit flying, had to quit driving, had to quit reading emails on the computer. And mind you, this was a fighter pilot. And then the first time in my entire life, I saw this guy depressed and just had never seen that before. And so that's just the horrible outcome of this disease is you take people and you take their sight away, and it's just debilitating. And so when the promise of VR and AR came along, he said, guys, I don't know how we're going to do it, but I think this is something that we can use to correct this disease. So we got some early VR headsets. We realized instantly that VR was going to work. The first headset we put on was hooked to a laptop, and first thing you want to do is run in the other room and read a computer. And we were like, no, you'll trip on the steps, right? So we knew VR was not going to be the way. It had to be AR. And kind of the breakthrough came when in 2013, we got him a curved TV for Christmas. This is Brigadier General Richard C. Freeman, and we got him a curved TV for Christmas. And he got close to the curved TV, and he said, it was a football game going on. He said, I still can't see the 50-yard line, but I can see everything else so much better. Mm-hmm. And that started our minds working. Whoa, okay, if he can see good on the periphery, why don't we do something to move everything out to the periphery, move it out of his blind spot so that he can see? So that's when we started programming. And again, the early stuff was on a VR system. We didn't let him walk around with it, and that's why we built an AR system. But we were able to basically manipulate the pixels so that when we did a visual field test in the eye to find out where the scotoma is and really the edge perimeter of the scotoma, then the headset knew the edge of where the person can see and not see. And then we were able to move the images out. For reading, we moved it only rectilinearly, which means just left to right. So as a person would scan down a page and go back, the letters would jump out. So we're using 60 frames a second video, And within every one of those 60 frames a second video, within 13 milliseconds, the software moves everything out. And so if you're under about 50, 60 milliseconds, the eye can't see the movement. And so just as they're scanning, the letters appear to them. And my father was able to read on his laptop, his computer. He was able to ride the lawnmower, able to trim hedges, and really got some mobility and got some, you know, useful life back. And that's when we started in 2017. He unfortunately passed out of the results of a heart surgery in 2016, but he made us promise that if anything happened to him, that we would go see his retinal surgeon, who's Dr. Thomas Finley in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so we started on the headset, started on a AR headset. We've been through about 26 iterations at this point in time, and like with the barrel of the optical engine, like maybe 90 iterations now. So it's been it's taken us a while to get there, but we have the only non-waveguide AR headset in the market. And because it's non-waveguide, because it's a catadioptric optical engine, we have 60 degrees horizontally field of view and 40 degrees horizontally field of view, which is the highest in the industry. And we have the highest resolution, which is 5K. So very high resolution. We found that in our clinical trials later on, we started, Dr. Finley thought it was a great idea. He was our first investor. He joked and said, you know, your father would come in and tell me that he had these glasses where he could see. And I just thought he had dementia. He said, I didn't believe him. He just said, you know, it was too impossible to believe. So he brought the headset to Dr. Finley. He tried it on and he sat there for about 10 minutes, just looking at how the letters were all reading a eye chart, a standard eye chart, reading eye chart, and how the letters hopped out. And he said, okay, I'm convinced. I'm writing you a check today. And so from there, he's the chairman of our medical advisory board. We have about 55 medical advisors out of that. About 30 of them are retinal specialists with the OR bot, which I'll tell you about in a minute. We've moved into other segments of surgery, but our focus right now is on retina and on ophthalmology, anterior and posterior surgery. And so I was going to say that in the clinical trials, we were able to take people that could not read. And I think in our first test of like 10 people, only one person could read the outside letters at the very top of the chart on the Logmar chart. Everyone else couldn't even see anything on the Logmar chart. Mm-hmm. And everyone read. We had the left eye was a little bit different than the right eye, but we got everyone down from worse than 2200 to 2053 in the left eye and 2060 in the right eye. And so it was quite a success. People were reading at, 125 words a minute, normal pace. First, everyone read at least three lines down the log chart. Some people read four lines and one guy read five lines down. And so that was considered a major success as far as advancing their ability to read. And then on the standard paragraph reading test, they were testing out some as high as 125 words a minute at 10 point. And some of them read down even to like 8 point. So we were doing 16, wow. 14, 12, and 10, and even 8 point type. And so from there, we've had quite a few innovations. But I think since I've talked for a minute, I'll stop and let you ask another question.
Well, no. I mean, look, I think the what piqued my interest about you and the company and what you guys are working on is we see patients like this every single day. I mean, I had a patient just yesterday came in with her daughter. And, you know, just expressed frustration. She's got geographic atrophy, has lost a lot of her central vision in both eyes. And we just started treatment on her because, you know, we're just looking to give her hope, right? And while it may slow down the disease, she's, you know, functionally, you know, debilitated in many aspects of her life. The thing she mentioned to me in particular yesterday was she's at an independent living facility and she wants to, one, remain as independent as possible, but two, she just wants to play cards with her friends. And she's having a hard time now. Just, when she's looking, she's like, I can't see the number. I can't see the suit. And it's making me really bad at this card game now. And, she's sweet and she just wants that little push to be able to hold on to this one thing that's important to her, right? And I think,
Yes.
solutions like yours are the ways that I think, at least in the near future, are ways that we can get these folks, get some of that independence back, get some of those things that bring them that joy back. And that's why I think, I wanted to make sure we're shining a light on companies like yours, because these are the solutions that are extremely practical. I mean, we as clinicians know and hear, and we could all give you patients we saw today that could use something like this, right? So I
Right.
applaud that. You mentioned something in there that I thought was interesting, and I think that would be worth kind of drilling a little bit deeper into, which is, the solution that you guys have come up with to me, and we're just going to talk right now for a moment about the Oculens, really the patient focused one, and then we can talk about, the Ocubot that you kind of previewed there for a second.
Right.
But what you seem to have really done well is marry the software and the hardware, right? I mean, I think there's like a couple breakthroughs we need, right? And I think it's not just the hardware and the gadgetry, but it's also the software and how we utilize that software to maximize kind of the impact of the hardware, right? And so
Yes.
if you could talk for a few minutes about like that background, because your background I found is just really fascinating in terms of what you did before you did this kind of ophthalmology focused company, because I know, you kind of followed a similar path before this, in terms of some of the software you worked on and some how it married to, mobile technology, for example. So I'd love for you to give our listeners maybe a minute or two of insight into that history, because I think it really ties into kind of how you got to where you are now.
Well, it's funny, we were the first digital product in television stations, over 100 television stations in the United States. In 1994, my dad, when I was growing up, my dad, as I mentioned, had a computer company. And so we grew up building computers, shipping them off. At one point in time, we were the largest supplier of computer products to the state of California and several other states. And there were some reasons for that that I won't go into, but we just simplified things for everybody. We put a daughter card with CPU with the daughter card in it, and then the states didn't have to upgrade a whole motherboard, and then the sound card didn't work, and other things didn't work. So they liked our products, and we were innovating way back then. So this is in the 80s and the 90s, and I had the background. We actually in 1994, from 92 to 94, we were working on it, but we invented mobile video. So we invented both the software and the protocol on how to send basically multiple in, multiple out signals, and on soft and on a cell system. That would mean that you capture a video and you break it up into 20K chunks, send it down multiple lines, wireless lines, antennas, get it to the tower, and then have a protocol to put it all together back in the right order. And so we got our first patents on that. When my brother, who was working on the project too and is working with me in Ocutrex, he turned around, looked at me, he said, "What are we going to call these clips?" And I said, "Just grab a frame. People will remember what they filmed if you show them a frame." Guess what we didn't patent? Thumbnails. And so thank you, world. We donated that to the we donated that to the technology and to the world. So if you ever see a thumbnail, we invented that, we forgot to patent it. But we haven't forgot anything like that again. So our background was in video transfer, and very complex video transfer, crunching algorithms, that kind of thing. And that's why my father, when he developed the disease and then the promise of AR and VR came along, he thought we would have the ability to harness that technology to do something with it, because we'd invented mobile video. At the time, we sold it to over 100 television stations, oil and gas companies, all kinds of people that were looking for a remote, real-time monitoring. We ended up winning two Emmy Awards in 1994, one best technology innovation for 1994 for television arts and sciences, and another one for best spot news. And so that gave us a background of understanding pixels, dixels, vexels, everything that it takes to like move things within moving video, and with that, that's how we developed the OR lens for AMD. We've had about 60 patients now in clinical trials, primarily in Oklahoma, but other places as well. And in the clinical trials, certain things we found, like if somebody's looking at a newspaper with a whole bunch of pictures and print and different stories and columns, we found that it was difficult, even with our moving the pixels out technology, which we call map pixel, that it was sometimes hard for them to find the end of a column and go back to the other, you know, go back to the column they'd read over into the next column. And so what we did with the software there is we innovated, and we basically are able to OCR the entire page. Then the page presents itself as an OCR. They can point in the air and touch which part of the, either the picture they want to see or the type they want to read. And when they do, then it streams the type just one light at a time through their eyes, so they don't have to worry about looking for columns and column breaks and that kind of thing. And we found that that was very easy for people to then get the information and get the message and be able to read. And I will tell you that during the clinical trials that we've had, the 15, 20 days that we've done clinical trials, not all together, but spread out, they're building a lot of tears. One lady looked at her son, and cards is one of the things that we test for. So cards, familiar faces, money, reading. So some of these things, we practical things is how we test. And one lady looked at her son and said, "Oh, you've grown a goatee. I didn't know you'd grown a goatee." the lady could recognize her daughter, and we've got a clip of her daughter just, you know, boohooing because her mother can come to the clinical trials and is able to read. And soon we'll have those out on the market. This September, we're looking to do the full commercial deployment of the headsets. We're doing a beta test now through July and August, and then we'll come out with the final product. But a lot of tears in the clinical trial offices, and really most of the surgeons that we've talked to have said, "Look, this is the only practical solution that I know of to help people with their scotomas and with their disease to be able to get back some of the functionality that they've lost."
Yeah, no, that's exactly the point, which is we need tools for our patients now, right? And so I'm happy that that you guys are working on this. So it sounds like potentially commercially available in September. Is that right?
September, October. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good. So we'll hopefully be able to kind of maybe help link to that in our podcast, so that people can find information about that, right? Ultimately, I think patients are going to want more information, and I think clinicians like myself are going to want information on how to get this tool into our patients' hands and see firsthand how it works. Because, you know, like I said, we have many patients that could benefit from these things, and so I'm just thankful that there are people like you, smart people like you, that are figuring out the way to get these tools in our hands. So appreciate that for sure.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's pivot. So now we've talked about your patient.
Can I add
patient.
Just one more thing?
Yeah, of
we
course,
do.
Of
we
course.
Are sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to mention. So we are coming out with our caretaker app. And
okay.
So one of the ways that we help people is the caretaker app can load. So the headset does everything that a standard smartphone can do. So you can talk to it. You can ask it to call Susan. You can ask it to call Aunt Mary. It's your cell phone too. It's Wi-Fi connected. It's cellular connected. And so one of the things that's a benefit for the surgeons is that every time they take a visual field test, we send that up to the HIPAA secured cloud. And then if that changes a certain percentage that the doctors tell us, this person's prone to a bleed, I want to know if there's any change, then the surgeon then it alerts the surgeon software in their office, and then you can go in and see. And if it does look like they've got a bleed, then you can get them in now so you can give them the shots to retard the effects of the disease, rather than 6 months from now they come in,
yeah,
they've just
and
got
when
a
it's,
larger
when it's too late. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because it's like, you know, we're in this moment in time where Homo CT was just approved. So, you know, that's another way we have of potentially monitoring people. You've got on the other side of it, just the tech non-medical, you've got the Apple Vision Pro, which is, you know, I think getting people more accustomed to this type of technology, whether it's, you know, wearing it, using it, you know, being able to kind of, you know, use AR in many different ways, right? So I think
Right.
it's fascinating to kind of see you guys, and you guys have been at it for a while now. So I think that the solution has kind of had time to develop, which is exciting to see for sure.
Thank
So
you.
that's, you know, that's your patient-facing solution. And I wanted to give a few moments to talk about your doctor-facing solution, right? So you've got the OR bot, and I definitely wanted to give some listeners some insights into that as well.
So the OR bot is a full surgery system. Right now we're working on FDA approval for anterior and posterior surgeries, and basically what it is it's a our own microscope. That is a very small microscope. Typically you see big, huge chunks of metal, and then you've got the oculars, right? And so then if you do have a monitor or something, you have to look around it. So that's unergonomic. So our whole thing, the surgeons that we talked to with our headset said, this is great for the patients, but I'm on my second neck surgery. What can you do for me, right? From bad ergonomics with the existing products that are out there. So we made a microscope that's only about 4 inches tall, and that gives the ability to have a monitor. We have a 3D monitor that we developed that is autostereoscopic, which means you look at it and it's 3D. You do not have to wear 3D glasses. And so it's got long, skinny prism lenses on it that sends part of the pixels one way, part of the pixels the other way. And so the outcome is somewhere between 25, we can gauge this and change it. But for surgeons, we've got it where it's between about 25 to 30 inches. Somewhere right in there, you will find your, because of your IPD, you will find your perfect spot where it's, totally 3D, and up to three people can see 3D at once. And so that's one way the surgeon can see, because we don't want to force everybody to wear a headset. If we go to conferences and if somebody grabs a headset and puts it on, we know they're probably a gamer. They're probably going to want to use it, right? They stand there like we're about to put them in front of a firing squad while we put it on them. They're probably going to want the monitor. So our OR bot captures the through a retina. We do use a biome at this point. We've got some other technology we'll talk about in the future, but we use a biome on the retina side and or none for cataract surgery. But we're able to basically resolve down to 3.5 microns, which is almost cellular level. Cells are about 1 to 2.5 microns. And we're able to give you magnification about 340 times. And so while retinal surgeons probably wouldn't use 340, we have found that the surgeons using our headset with prosthetic eye and pig eye have done epiretinal peels or simulated epiretinal peels a lot faster and without having to use dye, because they up the magnification to like 100 or 120, and then with they can see the edges, so they don't have to use the dye to basically find the edges of the IRL or the epiretinal membrane and peel it off. And so that extra, everybody else in the market has got about 20 times magnification. That extra magnification up to about 100 times, we found has been very useful for both cataract surgeons and looking at the surface of the eyeball to see if there's any divots and that kind of thing in it that they need to fix with like the LASIK surgery, and also in the retinal area to get down to really see what they're doing close up for like reattaching a retina to do to fix a macular hole for a tear, for epiretinal membrane, for those kind of things. So we think we've got a distinct advantage that will help the surgeons both do it's a little faster and safer and make the outcome better for your patient. If you don't have to use dye, then that's a great benefit, because dye is not all that it's safe, but you don't want to use it if you don't have to.
Yeah, no, and I think, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to kind of get, you know, our listeners some insight in that as well. And I know, you know, for the people listening, we'll link in the show notes to the website as well, because you've got some good videos on that website. But just, you know, just to point out, you know, it's amazing to me that we're still using kind of this, you know, old-fashioned technology with the microscopes and things, you know, day to day to do our surgeries. And that this level of technology has not yet crept into our ORs. And I'm glad that we're starting to see that now, because I think you hit it on the head. The most important aspect is safety, right? I mean, as
Right.
we, you know, take on more of these cases and we see more patients, we're going to need to be able to do these surgeries more efficiently. And with that efficiency comes safety. And I think this type of technology can help us kind of provide that level of care. And hopefully this is something that we're going to start to see as more ubiquitous as we bring on new surgeons. We train fellows all the time, and I tell them, you know, you're probably not going to be doing surgery like this in 10 years, right? You're going to be hopefully moving these things forward. And I think these are the gadgets that help us get there for sure. So
Yeah,
I'm
for instance,
excited.
like with the med tiles, real quick, with the med
Yeah.
tiles, a surgeon can wear the headset, see straight ahead, and he sees the surgery feed. If he turns to the left, he can see equipment print out, like
Yeah.
your the flow, like the laser, that kind of stuff. Look to the right, he can see preoperative files. He can open them with the touch of a finger. Well, he can still be sterile because
Yeah,
he's
that's
not touching
amazing.
anything. Open them up, look at the preoperative file, and even overlay it over the real surgeries.
Right? Stuff that you can't do today because you've got sterile gloves on. And oh, not to mention, you know, you don't have that ability in a lot of these rooms to have all that data in front of you, right? Yeah, so that's fascinating. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about your history, how you got there. We've talked about what you're working on currently and what should soon become commercially available for everybody. So, Michael, tell me as we kind of wrap things up here, tell me what you envision happening in 5 years, 10 years with the company. Where do you want to go with all of this? What do you want to see happen? What's a success for you? You know, if we fast forward 5 to 10 years from now, in terms of where you are and what you want to see happen next.
Well, one of the things is because we are not so optics heavy like some of the competitors are, we actually can give them a OR system that is 3D visualization different ways, either the headset or the monitor, for a little less money than the competitors. So as surgeons more and more don't go to the hospital, they have their inpatient, they have their outpatient, they have their own surgery centers. Then they can have more and more of these. And one of the things is like a surgeon with a clinic, a surgery clinic in his office. If a junior surgeon is working on something and gets into trouble and needs help or advice, then the senior surgeon has to gown up, suit up, go on back. It may take 5 minutes, 10 minutes to, solve the problem or tell them what to do. Now they can just put our headset on in their office, see exactly what the surgeon is seeing back in the surgery room. And so that's the kind of things that we hope becomes ubiquitous here in the next 5, 10 years, is those kind of tools that will make the surgeon's life easier because of the ergonomics and safer, better. Become, ubiquitous, and we see it advances the practice.
That's fascinating. So, I mean, you can almost imagine a world, especially as we get more and more, you know, comfortable with remote care, of us being able to help people or even train other surgeons, you know, across the globe,
Yes.
and not just train them, but you know, like you said, you know, pick up the headset when they may need, you know, help or a question to be answered. To be able to do that in real time, is just a fascinating kind of future to think about. But it doesn't sound like it's that far down the road, because of folks like you that are working on these solutions. So definitely appreciate that as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Michael, I want to thank you for your time today. I think the listeners are going to find this fascinating and get insights into your company and hopefully ask more questions, right? And I think as we move forward, you know, I think the best part about all of this is that, you know, just like you have kind of engaged retina specialists across the country, I think it's important for us to have these dialogues to help build the best solutions for our patients and solutions for our fellow surgeons, right? I think it's important to have these dialogues. And so I really want to thank you for that time and thank you for the work you guys are doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you for the time on your show today.
Thank you for listening in to the New Insight Podcast. We really appreciate your time. Be sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred listening or watching platform. And if you're interested in more ophthalmology news or other podcasts, visit hcplive.com and check out our offerings. For now, I'm Dr. Viral Sheth. Hope to see you next time to discuss what's new in sight.